Planning Commission to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Chair Stan Eisner. Vice Chair Matthew Nolan. Commissioner Steve Maloney.
Here.
Commissioner Jennifer Parker. Commissioner Daniel Mills.
Here.
Commissioner Dennis Teschlag.
Here.
And Commissioner Brian Hyatt.
Here.
I still have Jared Mead on here. It's been a while, sorry.
Yes. I hope everybody has had a chance to now put a face to a name. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I could say a couple words, it's great to see the Planning Commission sitting up there. It's been about 20 months, it's almost 2 years, and I think we met twice in 3 years. And some of you have never met as a Planning Commission, so it's great for us to be getting back together. For those of you who don't know, I got a name tag right here. I'm Tom Rogers, and I'm the manager of the building and the planning side of things. And, of course, here's Sherry, who is presenting tonight, associate planner, and Kristen's a senior planner. And she ran the design review board meeting earlier tonight. She doesn't have an item directly on tonight's agenda, but this is pretty much the team you're going to see, and we hope to be seeing more of you over the coming months.
I do understand that there's quite a backlog of work that's going to be coming to the commission in the next few months.
I'll discuss a little bit about that on for the good of the order at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Next order of business is election of officers, and start with the chair. Someone was interested, or will make a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to nominate Stan Eisner as chair.
Aye.
Now, the election of vice chair, I'd like to nominate Mr. Nolan.
Second. Aye.
Aye.
Now, the approval of the minutes of January 19th.
Could I just make a quick comment? Since we're so close to the end of the year, do you guys want to just agree that maybe the election would hold for 2019 as well? Instead of in 2 months turning around and reelecting. Okay.
Yeah, especially after, these two oversaw the most peaceful year of Planning Commission history. I think, that's well deserved.
It speaks to our temperament. Wait, get the cobwebs off. The next order is the approval of the minutes of the January 19th 2017 meeting. You should have those in your packet, and hopefully you've had a chance to review them.
Adopt the minutes as drafted.
Second.
Move seconded to adopt the minutes of January 19th. All in favor?
Aye.
Now we're into the work session.
There we go. Good evening. My name is Sherry Ringstad. I'm an associate planner with the city, and it's my pleasure to present these code amendments to you this evening. The code amendments are relating to code enforcement, and I'd just like to start with a little bit of background. A couple of years ago, we switched. It was the police department community services officer that did our code enforcement. It wasn't the best system because she wasn't as familiar with the code, and she also had a lot of other duties. So code enforcement tended to kind of come at the bottom of her to-do list. So we switched it over. Planning and development takes care of all the land use related code enforcement. And at that time, we kind of took a look at the process to see how it was working and made some changes for the better. And it's been working pretty good, but as we got into it right away, we found some parts of the code that were hard to enforce, and so we proposed some changes. And the changes just clarify the code, and make it easier for us and the public. And the PowerPoint, I structured it the same way as the staff report. First, there's a discussion of the issue. Then I kind of talk about how we're going to address that, and then the actual code language itself. So this is similar to what you saw in the staff report. The first issue, the city currently prohibits inoperable vehicles from being stored in a driveway or front yard setback. And the problem there comes, our definition of inoperable vehicle is includes any vehicle that doesn't have current licensing. So basically what that means is it could be a newer car in good repair, but just because the little tag on the license is the wrong color in the wrong year, that would make it not compliant with our code. And we kind of felt that the intent of the code was not to regulate license tabs and whether it was current. The intent was to keep, you know, broken down junk vehicles out of the front yard and the driveway. So what we're doing to address that, we're replacing the term inoperable with a junk vehicle definition, and we're adding that junk vehicle definition into the code. Another thing that's come up, RVs and boats are prohibited also from being stored in front yards. And frequently, if somebody has an RV and they're parking it legally off-site somewhere, but they're getting ready for a trip, so they want to bring it to their house to load it, or they're coming back from a trip, they want to unload it and clean it up before they take it back to storage. The code didn't allow any provision for that. So we were proposing a time-limited period that they can park it in front of their house for that purpose. And the time that we selected was 72 hours. You betcha.
I believe that the MCCA, some of the homeowners associations already have some of these provisions in their own sort of private covenants. And so this would be consistent with that. See, it would be consistent with the covenants, but they'd still be violating city code. And so we all kind of winked at it and said it's okay. By the time we get around to it, it'll be gone. But it, rather than have people be violating and ask us and have to wink at them, it's better to call out kind of what what's we seem as reasonable.
So then the language that we're proposing, this is to section 1722.080B. No recreation vehicle, boat, trailer, or, and we're striking inoperable, so, or junk vehicle shall be parked or stored in any front yard or front yard setback area, including the driveway. Exception, recreational vehicles and boats may be temporarily parked in the front yard setback area for purposes of cleaning and or loading for a period not to exceed 72 hours. And I'd like to stop after each issue to get any comments or thoughts that you guys have on. Yes.
So one question I have is, and I certainly appreciate the intention here and trying to make things simple to enforce. Only concern on the RV exception would be, now are you in the business of, is this for cleaning purposes or planning purposes, or is this, you know, grandma's with us for the holiday weekend, and so they're just parking the RV out in front of the house for Thanksgiving, and it's, hey, I've got 72 hours, now I can have this in front of my house.
Well, I don't think we were thinking of making them prove that they were cleaning it, so just it kind of limiting a time period that it could be there to 72 hours. And as Tom mentioned before, probably by the time somebody complains about it and we get an opportunity to go out there, it may well have already exceeded that 72-hour. So, but, I mean, it's a good thought. I don't know how else you could address that. How? I don't know how you could make someone prove that.
I agree, and that's why should that language be in there? Because if you're not going to be asking or having to prove that it's for cleaning or prep purposes, would it be simpler just to say, hey, you can have an RV, but it has to be only 72 hours, versus having some intention there that you're not going to be able to verify?
Oh, I see what you mean. So you're okay with the exception, but you just wanted to take out the purpose part?
Just for discussion.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying is you take out the words for the purposes of cleaning or loading, and so it would just be a front yard setback you can't be in that for a period not to exceed 72 hours.
I think you might end up actually getting more people kind of fudging on that, you know, deciding.
I have that was exactly that. Yeah. I love the extension of 72 hours, having had to park the boat in front of the house and go, move, get everything ready. But what it opens the door to is the moving squatter. And yeah. And it's coming. I mean, the homeless situation is spreading throughout the county like you cannot believe. And I'm, you know, I see this opening the window to, or opening the door to, I'm just going to move from cul-de-sac to cul-de-sac for 72 hours at a time, and it'll take a month and a half for someone to catch me.
Well, actually, I think this would only be when it's in the driveway or the front yard. Okay. It doesn't, when it's parked on the street, that becomes like a police department issue. And we do have, we do.
My only concern about this one.
Gotcha.
Okay. Down at the beach, that they have a traffic officer who comes by and chocks the tires to enforce the 3-hour limit.
Well, probably the only way we'd know about it is if somebody submitted a complaint, because we certainly don't have the staff to drive around and look.
Right.
So it would be if somebody submitted a complaint, and frequently we'll have, a code enforcement where we have to call back or call them, contact them, and that was the answer. Well, I had my boat out for the week, and I was just cleaning it, and I store it at this storage unit somewhere. So at least when we get that answer from people, we could say, okay, the code allows it for 72, and how long have you had it there? And, you know, just confirm when they're going to have it moved by, kind of thing.
I like the purposeful statement of having it cleaned or getting ready for a trip, simply because it does clearly state this isn't the intent of letting Grandma stay for 3 days at a time.
You can't hook it up to water and power.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Use
it's
it
a
as
temporary.
A spare bedroom.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I have one comment or question, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm troubled by the term junk.
Okay.
Paraphrase George Carlin. Your stuff is stuff.
Well, we do have a definition for junk that's coming up next slide. And that should maybe clarify that a little bit.
Junk is an innocuous sort of
term. Right. Well, it is, and it's subjective. But so next slide, we're proposing a definition for junk vehicle. And this definition I actually took out of the RCWs, so we're consistent with state law on that. And it gets rid of that invalid tabs, which was really the problem that we're trying to solve. Junk vehicle means a vehicle certified under RCW 46.55.230 as meeting at least three of the following requirements. Is 3 years old or older? Is extensively damaged, such damage including but not limited to any of the following: a broken window or windshield, missing wheels, tire, motor, or transmission, is apparently inoperable, has an approximate fair market value equal only to the approximate value of the scrap in it. I'm sorry. Oh, well, yeah. I think it's harder. I mean, if it's sitting there and it doesn't have a motor and it's growing rust and moss and the tabs were last updated in 20, well, we're not looking at tabs. Strike that. it clearly hasn't been driven in 4 or 5 years. Then I think that's when you could look at it, a reasonable person could look at it and say, that's not worth anything. That's barely worth throwing away.
And staff would be able to contact a scrap dealer and say, I've got a, you know, 65 Bonneville.
That apparently
that doesn't run, you know, still has most of its stuff. What's it worth? I don't think
no.
So.
Yeah.
Probably based on how much it weighs and how much, it's probably by the pound.
And it does have to meet at least three of these. Most of them almost automatically would meet the 3 years old and older. That seems like almost kind of too new to me, but then they would just need to meet two of the other ones. We have had a lot of cars that were literally growing moss and, you know, flat tire. And
could I add a little bit also? Is we decided to go with something that's already been adopted by the state, because the sheriff and the police department, if somebody abandons a vehicle like on the side of the road, I mean, there are certain provisions that lets them do things or they can make people remove them. And so I don't think it's a perfect definition. You know, maybe I could write a better one, but it's so subjective. And then so we decided to pick something that had been used before and it's been in place for a long time. Not yet.
Yeah.
No, they would go. We're still at a very early stage, so they have not, that I'm aware of, right?
No, they haven't. They
would do that before we go to a public hearing, though, and make sure that whatever comments we have in the final language goes through before we.
But since it is what's in the RCWs, I would think that they've determined that it's enforceable, the state. You would think. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I don't know. Any more comments? Are we okay with that?
So just to clarify then, this only applies, this particular code section is only driveway or front yard, not what's on the street. That's something separate.
That's the police department parking ordinance.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
And people can store, like, a vehicle in their backyard if it's screened. So if they
or the garage, right? I mean,
yeah,
if someone's got some beater in the garage. Yeah.
Except someday.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They can store it somewhere.
But you just don't want to have your neighbors looking at it all day long for years and years and years. Okay.
Well, it becomes a property value safety.
Absolutely.
Crime issue.
Okay. We'll go ahead and move on to the next issue. Our current code for a commercial vehicle defines it as being 6,000 pounds. We prohibit commercial vehicles in a residential zone, and that 6,000-pound limit is not really realistic because a big truck, a F-350, I think I looked that up, that's 8,000 pounds. And it's certainly not inconceivable that somebody could have a truck like that that they just use for their personal use, and they should be able to park it in their driveway. So it's not a real workable definition for commercial vehicle.
The F-250 also is over 6,000.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
So it's a very archaic
definition. It's an old definition, I guess. So our solution is to remove that 6,000-pound qualifier and then add a better definition for a commercial vehicle. And we also took the opportunity to add a provision here to prohibit construction equipment from being stored on a site, because that actually came up a couple of times too. The proposed code language, 1722.080C, commercial vehicles, no commercial vehicle, combination of vehicle and trailer, or any type of motorized construction equipment shall be parked on any lot in a residential zone except for motorized construction equipment being used in conjunction with an approved construction project.
Well, I was just going to say, so does that mean if someone drives a work truck and they work in construction and they drive that truck to every day, can they not park it in their driveway?
Right.
I'm asking because I actually have a neighbor who he works in construction, and that's what he drives. So
I think it would depend a little bit. If it was just kind of like a standard pickup that can be any kind of like a family car, and they had a little logo on the door that said so-and-so's construction,
right?
It's a little different than if they have a flatbed truck or if they have a box truck.
Isn't there a definition of commercial vehicle?
That's what I was going to say. Is there a commercial vehicle definition?
Yeah, we're proposing.
Since you're taking away the weight.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And as you mentioned, commercial vehicle, we're adding a definition. We don't already have one. And I took this one actually from the WSDOT definition. Commercial vehicle means any vehicle that is used or maintained for the transportation of persons for hire, compensation, or profit, or is designed, used, or maintained primarily for the transportation of property and commodities, and is a motor vehicle having a declared gross weight in excess of 10,000 pounds, or is a motor vehicle having three or more axles? So.
I think it's good that this comes out from the state.
Yeah.
It just makes it that much more defensible. I think it's fine.
And I think this would maybe get to your question. If they're using that vehicle primarily to, like, haul landscape supplies out to their landscape, you know what I mean? Then I think it would fit under this definition of commercial vehicle. But if it's just kind of advertising their business, and but they really drive their family around in it, you know.
I think one thing to look at is the 10,000 pounds is a pretty large vehicle. We've had neighbors get in spats with each other, and the person works for maybe Beacon Plumbing, and he has like a typical size, like a box van. And so according to our thing, it's over 6,000 pounds. So they turn in their neighbor, and then, but the person drives it back and forth to work every day. If you took the sign off, you wouldn't know that it was. It's over 6,000 pounds. It doesn't even really need the sign to have to be considered a commercial vehicle. So the 10,000 pounds kind of gets rid of, I think, what you're talking about is somebody that has an F-250 that has maybe a little diesel thing in the back that has a pump on it or something. But it's still really basically just a pickup truck. So that one would not be a violation under this, what we're proposing here. We're trying to make it more for the more egregious three-axle trucks, which is really like a large kind of a flatbed truck, a moving van.
Or a truck and trailer, too.
Or a truck and trailer. Something that's clearly above what a residential scale, and not something that you see lots of them just parked in the grocery store parking lot anyway. Because it's really hard to make that argument. It's sort of just who gets picked on and who doesn't. And
it's a hard one to enforce, too.
Hard to deal with.
I got a question related to this. So we're everything has a motor in it, but you do make reference to construction equipment, like a backhoe. What about construction equipment like Connex boxes and trailers? Connex boxes, those are the large steel storage boxes that goods are shipped in from Asia or something, and then afterwards they're recycled into storage boxes that are dropped on job sites. So it's not motorized, but it's the size of a trailer. And then I was thinking about trailers. So, I mean, very obscure, but...
Well, trailers are prohibited outright.
Okay, all right.
It's
okay.
Like, you know, boats, RVs, trailers. It's in our list.
Okay. I missed that. All right.
Can't be there at all.
The boxes themselves wouldn't follow into the vehicle.
Got it.
If taken off the trailer and set on the ground. In fact, if you do it, if you put it on a foundation, you can actually get a building permit.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think it would fall under this condition, but
okay.
If it's a commercial area, it has to get design review board approval and or be screened in some way. If it's a residential zone, you get HOA stuff and setbacks.
It's very obscure. Yeah, it's very okay. Thanks.
Well, obscure happens.
There's always the exception.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. That's true. Okay. Thanks.
Outfit now that puts these boxes in your driveway or on the street, you fill them up and then they haul them away. So that size up to literally to containers that come off a ship, and people are buying them for storage buildings. So it's a real issue.
Usually when somebody's doing one of those, like for a move where they bring those boxes and fill them up, they're almost always parked on the street. They're a little too big usually for the driveway. And they can park those on the street. They need to get a right-of-way permit to do it. And they're also limited to how long it can be there and, you know, to make sure it doesn't block traffic or sight distance or...
If I could also... I hate to jump in. We have had complaints about people if they're doing a construction project and they want to put one of those pods, I think they call them. And sometimes they put them in the driveway and it's only there for a little while. And if it's part of a construction project... You say, well, it's okay as long as it's part of that, but there's no real rules about it. So that's kind of one of those things that may be coming back to you as part of a future housekeeping, because right now we don't have clear direction. We try to use common sense, and most of the time we work it out, but there really is, if somebody wants to abuse it and just leave it there, they're storing something in their yard.
Right.
And also if there's any kind of a rehab being done on a home, it's going to be there for an extended period of time. And,
right.
So that would require, I guess, a construction waiver or permit for that?
Well, If it was parked in the street, it would be a right-of-way permit. If it could fit in the driveway, I'm not really sure where it would fit in our code.
We'd have to come up with rules for that. If it's somebody that's just moving, my daughter moved, and she was going to go away for a while, it only came for like 2 days. She filled it up, and a truck came by, took it up, and they stored it on something that was like in, 20 feet up in the air and hung on a hook somewhere. So that's very quick. But we might have something, if you have an active building permit, that it can stay as long as the active building permit, up to a year or something. That's something that we haven't even thought about too much, but we would bring those rules to you to look at.
Number of rehabs that are starting to occur more and more, I see that as an issue that's going to be popping up, and particularly as it's kind of gentrifying more in the area here too.
Yeah, we have been getting more remodels. The other thing that came up for me is the porta potties in the front yard. When
that's
somebody's
attractive.
Doing a remodel, and what we didn't really have anything in the code that addressed it, but what we said, as long as they were remodeling a bathroom and a kitchen, so, and plus a lot of times people just want there to be somewhere else that construction workers can use rather than coming in their home, I guess. But as long as it was tied to an active permit and was currently being worked on, it was okay to stay there. Although we don't actually have anything official in the code that addresses that. It's kind of how we unofficially addressed it.
Work actually taking place.
But we haven't written that for you yet, so
that could be another one.
We have quite a
list
there that I'll talk about later. But
as a runner, I love the porta potties scattered all over the city, so I encourage that.
Right?
I love remodels and porta potties.
What the trees are for?
Okay, the last one is the easiest one of all. Right now, our code currently states that all buildings and structures shall be maintained in original or better than original condition. And we kind of felt like asking for all buildings to be better than original was asking a bit too much. So the intent of the code really is just that they be maintained in good repair. So that's what we're proposing. That section of the code would read 1724030A. All buildings and other structures shall be maintained in good repair by the property owner with respect to exterior appearance and landscaping. We're just
we've had complaints of, like, there's a little moss on the top of the roof. And sometimes you drive by, you don't even notice it. If you stare, you go, well, yeah, I guess that could be cleaned off, but does it really raise to the level where the city of Mill Creek should spend money on those kind of things?
Yeah.
Usually that isn't really the issue. It's some two neighbors are kind of having a dispute of some sort, and they'll try to use us in the mill.
Oh, no, that's in our code. Yeah. Better than original.
Wasn't the code.
Okay. Well, that's all we have.
Barry, one point on that one.
Yeah.
If you look at your bullet point number 4, kept free of inoperable vehicles, don't you want to edit that to say junk? To be consistent with the other proposed change.
Okay, let me see.
Yeah.
Well, you mean on the definition of junk vehicle?
Yeah, kept free of junk vehicles, and so it's going to say inoperable without any edits to it. So you have inconsistencies.
Oh, right.
I'm asking.
Okay.
Part B of the.
Oh,
same. Just want to make that junk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That one.
The one in a billion chance that someone actually filed a lawsuit, right?
It's those one in a billions that always come up, though. Just to let you know where we're going next, we're going to go ahead and incorporate your comments from tonight. You guys had some good suggestions for maybe some additional code amendments. Maybe we'll try and bring those back before we go to a public hearing, maybe bring a couple more. But the next step after the work session discussions would be a public hearing, and then we'll take it forward to council for adoption. But I don't know how you feel. I felt like there were some good points, so could we just bring a couple additions when we bring it to public hearing, do you think?
We could talk about it, but I think it's best to not go to public hearing until we've talked about it.
Right.
So either we hold off on the public hearing and bring a few more things and have one big package, or we would just keep making the momentum. Really, like, downside is taking them to the council.
Getting them scheduled on council agenda.
Counseling the schedule and having a whole bunch of ordinances to them. Maybe it's better to sort of wait till we get a little bit of a package. There's no super rush. We might want to bring a couple more smaller packages in and then wrap them into one larger public hearing.
Yeah.
Do you have a clear picture of where you're going with this?
What I'd like to ask is that at our next meeting, if time and tide permit, a work program for the next 12 months could be put together that showed what those items are that we want to work on. And, you know, it's not a matter of holding anybody to it, but at least we'd have a picture of.
Well, I'll tell you what. The city council is looking at the budget right now. So we will have a better idea around January what our budget is and what, and I'll talk a little bit later about some of the projects I know are coming. And so we can have some of the things that are on the work program, but as far as every topic for the whole 12 months, I'm not sure that I'll come to that kind of detail. But I can certainly hit some of the highlights tonight and maybe have a little more definitive answer, but it won't be by the next meeting. Yeah.
It's hard for me, anyway, to see these things in pieces and not understand clearly how it all fits into where we're going, which is the maintenance of the general plan and the other document and other issues that we deal with. So just so we have as clear a picture as you have.
Thank you for that. You kind of finished and wrapped up. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for your comments. Very helpful. Thanks for the catch on the junk.
In terms of calendar, October, we're here. November, is our meeting in the week before Thanksgiving?
The 15th.
Yeah, I think it's the week before Thanksgiving.
And what about December?
We'll let you know in November. I'm not sure. We may very well have an item or two. I think if we do the public hearing, if we decide that the code enforcement one is a fairly large, not large in volume, but it's certainly important to how we enforce the code, and that we've been sort of holding off on that for a long time. So we may just want to knock that one off and get that in the books as soon as possible. So my guess is, now that I've been thinking about it for the last 2 minutes, is we'll probably do the public hearing. We do have to do the CEPA, too, and get that working that really quick. It does need to go because it is substantive. So we will have to do that. So we may not be meeting in December. I don't know yet. But certainly starting in January, I think we'd be ready to start meeting again. But I don't know definitely about December yet. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll have a public hearing on what we talked about tonight. Yes, I do. I was going to say, now that we're back together, hopefully we'll get some momentum going, and a number of things that have sort of been on the back burner for a long time and some things that have sort of just recently come to the top. So I'll just go through just a few of those right now. We're right now in the process of revising our transportation impact mitigation fees. And part of that has required us to do an analysis of our level of service standards in our transportation element. May need some modifications, so there's a possibility we'll be revisiting that over the next year. Nothing immediate. We have a number of housekeeping amendments that we've been keeping track of. We came up with a couple more tonight, dealing with pods and other things. So I think that we can always be bringing things like that. If there's something that isn't specifically, we can probably round a few of those up at any time. Some of the larger things, one of the things that's proposed in the budget is to do a study first to see what the feasibility is, and then possibly a subarea plan of the area between the town center and 164th along Mill Creek Boulevard. We have a very wide right-of-way there. We have a lot of 1980s sort of business parky things that probably aren't the best use of land considering how our city has aged and the value of property as it's gone on. And so it's not something that we're talking about knocking buildings down or buying buildings or anything like that. But as these go through their recycling, as they will someday, is what do you want them to be in the future? Do you want them to knock down something and build the exact same thing again? Or do you want to have some other vision? So it'd be some sort of way to start that process. It involves hiring a consultant to assist us in putting, doing probably a feasibility study of what the market would bear, you know, what would be the best use. And it would also involve what to do with that road. Do you want a wide road? Do you want a narrower road with wider boulevard down the sides? Do you want wide sidewalks? I mean, almost anything's kind of, there's a lot of room there to sort of a blank slate, if you will. The road isn't like town center, though, because it functions almost as a state highway connecting 164th to 527. It carries a lot more traffic than Main Street, which sort of you get off that and go into Main Street. So it has some challenges. It has some real opportunities. We don't know the answers yet. That's why we would need the consultant. But that's certainly on our radar. And so if the council funds that, then that's something we'll be going forward with. And you'll certainly be involved in that project.
Would that include the post office?
The post office, yes. I mean, it's near there, and it certainly will be taken into consideration. Now, the supremacy clause of the they're going to do, we can't make them do anything. We can't even call them and tell them their weeds are too high, or else we get a call from the FBI almost telling us.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and they don't take care of their landscaping either sometimes. Grass has been waist high before. But yeah, certainly that would be taken, and actually that's kind of an interesting feature. We have a lot of people come and use the post office, so that's you know, that has a lot of opportunity as far as it brings people into the area. So it's a good thing from that perspective. And then the last thing that's the FCC has recently adopted a new rule that goes into effect in January, and it deals with the new 5G system for cellular wireless communication facilities. And they're different. They're called small cells because they don't need to be very high. They attach to light poles or light standards like the Cobra head. And they also need to be in residential areas. So we are in some ways not allowed to prohibit these sorts of things. And so we need to get some rules in place so when they come in, we know how to address them, make sure they look as good as possible. And we also have to be able to process them within 60 days. Which our current code doesn't say. So we're going to have to update our code on that. So that's probably one of the first things we're going to be bringing to you. The whole staff's going to a webinar next week to hear from it. We have one of the most renowned attorneys in the state of Washington that's an expert in this field. His works at Ogden Murphy Wallace, which is our city attorney's office. So we had that advantage. She's done this before. So I think we've got the resources in place to start working on this with you. One of the things that's interesting about that is that it could be somewhat controversial because we're talking about bringing these kind of facilities into the residential areas where right now they're pretty much just down 527 and the main arterials and like on the water tower at Silver Lake Water District site and things like that. So there may be some public here that may show interest. So there may be more than just this here when these items come forward. And one of the things that a lot of cities are doing because of the controversy is to put really good rules in place at the beginning but make them more like building permits to where there isn't a appeal. It's more ministerial, if you will. There, even if it meets the code, it gets approved. It doesn't go through a public hearing kind of process that just brings out things when you're forced to approve them anyway. You don't have authority to not approve them. It just creates false expectations on the public that they can go testify and do something about it when really the city has no authority. You know, if you have the rules, you have to approve them. We're preempted by the federal government. So,
thank you.
We do, but the technology has changed, and these self-driving cars are going to require really good signal strength all over. And so this, the technology itself is smaller, lower, and more. And so they need to be placed on street poles. And so you can say you can't go on our street poles, City of Mill Creek, but that means, okay, well, we get to put new poles in too. And so now you have twice as many poles. So you, the job of us to do is to come to some sort of a understanding of should they use the existing poles and augment them or put in new poles. I mean, those are decisions that we have to make, and we'll start doing that in January.
Come back to us then with the presentation after you've been trained on this.
Yeah, well, we'll bring in options. We'll bring our city attorney with us. You know, and there are things that don't look too bad. Sometimes to make something, I mean, you put lipstick on a pig, it still looks like a pig. You know, I've seen some, like in palm trees look pretty good to make a fake palm tree look like a, but I don't know if we want to have fake palm trees every quarter mile or even pine trees. I mean, well, we'll bring you options, and you guys can talk about them.
Is there code already that prevents people from
being those? No. No. Well, right now you need a conditional use permit, and the 4G type is the taller towers, right. And so we have one on. There's one on the city park property, so that's on the city park. Most of them are in the public right of way, like on the PD poles. The one at Silver Lake Water District, that's public, but you could have them on private property. We don't have a whole lot. We have
MCCA.
MCCA has one in the nature preserve.
Yeah.
Polygon has one right in the middle there.
Our park?
That's public.
Sports park?
Yeah, that's public. Some of the apartment buildings have facilities on 527.
So for 5G, is that more of a concern?
Yeah.
If the city is too restrictive, what's them to stop, you know, Verizon from, hey, if you want to put one of these in your backyard, no one will really see it, it'll meet all the other MCAA codes, and now all of a sudden you got people fighting to get that, you know, $400 a month.
That's a possibility. We're going to have to come up with, I think what they're going to want to do is put it where the power lines are. So they're going to want it along the easements that already exist. So probably what, they'd rather deal with the right-of-way than deal with a bunch of individual owners.
Yes, but I do know that they deal with individual owners, tens of thousands of them all over the country.
Yeah. So that's our job as a city to decide how to set the regulations up. And those are better, you know, we're not experts yet. I haven't even taken the webinar yet. And then we'll have a
then you'll be an expert.
Our attorney, I think, will help, will assist us and provide you with a lot of options. Hopefully we come with a good recommendation that our council can take the action that. Yeah, I think it's sort of a necessary evil. I think we all love our phones. And I think this whole self-driving cars, people want to do it, and you can't have gaps. They're going to require this GPS and all this power to do all this. So that's what we're hearing.
I would caution about even framing it as a battle, but it's not a battle because we are not going to win. There's no way. When it's coming, it's going to be here, and it's going to be here one way or another. So I think it's up to us to make sure we have a plan that allows it to happen in the most aesthetically and safety-minded way, because it's happening. And I can't wait for it to happen here, personally, because the current set, I mean, it really, when you think of how many times you still can't get a decent signal somewhere in the city, and I've had every carrier there is, and there's spots where you're just like, I can't even make a phone call, let alone have a self-driving car.
It's important we get out in front of it so you can drive how it looks,
yeah,
you know, exactly. How it operates.
Yeah, and I think we have a fairly, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but these facilities have not been a big controversy in Mill Creek. I think people realize that they like their technology, and we have conditional use permits with an appeal process, and we have never had one appealed. In fact, there's been a couple that get a few comments, and but other jurisdictions have gone to war over this and had a lot of problems. And part of it's because we've done a good job with our concealment technology and the rules we have for the 4G and 3G type that went in under our current code. But I think it's right to get in front of it and provide the best options for us to choose from. But we haven't had a lot. I hope this room isn't full of people all shaking their fists at us, but you never know.
The plan is to integrate it well. It'll be seamless. It'll be fine.
Back on item two, the Town Center South sub-area plan, you mentioned the council was voting on a budget. Do you want any sign of approval or recommendation from the Planning Commission to the council? That would be something we're supportive of. I mean, it's come up over several years that we think the area between Town Center and 164 seems like a ripe area for us to have more density, do something with as a city. If that would be a benefit as the council looks at that, I would think it'd be very, you know, I think as a commission we'd be willing to talk about that, put a motion forward.
Considering the amount of time we have, I mean, I was thinking maybe a planning commission resolution about that might be great. I don't know if we have time for that. Maybe just a brief discussion, and if you're all on the same page, a motion that we could certainly transmit to the council.
I've always felt like that was an area in town where we have the ability to do more, and it has the creek frontage, it has the backside of the Albertsons and the shopping area. You know, I think actually saw some nice redevelopment with when the Star Bar went in there, and how do we foster as a city more of that coming in along that corridor? And we've had the abandoned restaurant that was by Commissioner Mills' law practice for years and years, and to see that area redevelop and be something more, or at least, you know, present those opportunities to the business owners there, I think would be beneficial to the tax base of our city and provide more of a, you know, gathering spot.
Can you draft such a...
Or do you just carry it forward because they're in budget now?
Well, they're considering things now. I mean, if someone were just to make a budget recommending that the city council fund something like that as is being considered or proposed, and a second to vote, then we could forward that. Like, we could draft the minutes up, and even though they'd still be draft, we could forward those, let them know that that's been done, or have our director make that part of their presentation.
I would make a motion that the Planning Commission is supportive of a sub-area plan south of the Town Center to look at opportunities for redevelopment and development in that area, and best and highest use of the property.
And I'll second that. I think it's a great idea. Commissioners?
I agree.
Call the question?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much. That was great. I think that's all I had, other than I think next week we're going to deal with the public hearing.
Yeah, next month.
Next month, I mean, right, on the 15th.
Just add that we are required by law to have all the commissioners, and I think it's every 4 years. So it's something that are ready for a refresher. And it is available online. So what I can do is send you guys a link. But what I would ask is that when you're finished, if you can email me back a certification that says you finished it, because that's my job. I'm just going to keep track of this.
There is one piece of it that is not voluntary, is actually essential and required, and that's having to do with public meetings, what constitutes public meetings, and what are the responsibilities and cautions of commissioners dealing with public meetings.
Actual one for us to bring to City Hall, which is the DC, and we'll get that
How am I going to get out of town? Commissioners, is there anything else for the good of the order?
Thank you.
Good to see
you. Yeah, exactly.
And with that, we're adjourned. Less than an hour. It's good.
Yeah.